Good morning and welcome to Saturday in the Studio. I'm Tom King, and we are here, as we are most Saturdays, with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau, and we are here to take your financial questions. 715-845-2155. Good morning, sir.
So this guy walks in a bar. Hold it, we're live?
Yes, we are.
Oh, here we go. Hey, we are here on this beautiful March 29, 2014. Oh, man, what are we going to talk about? Go ahead and hit me with that article. You just popped it up, that one in the front. Let's go ahead and start with that. Folks, we sit here and talk about the articles just to wait for your precious calls to answer the questions that you might have.
That's right. And we want you to give us a call here this morning. Anything that's on your mind regarding your investment portfolio, or if you have questions, no question is too big or too small for us to kick around here this morning.
And folks, this studio is hot this morning. I think it's Tom's tube top, but nonetheless, it is warm in here. Holy cow.
Author Michael Lewis. I believe this is the same Michael Lewis who wrote the great book Moneyball about Major League Baseball. He's also written a couple of books about Wall Street, and he's got a new one called Flash Boys, A Wall Street Revolt. And he made the comment on 60 Minutes that high-frequency trading hurts regular customers, that the market is rigged for the big boys. I think everybody thinks that, realizes that. What's your take on his contention?
He's talking about high-frequency trading, and high-frequency trading, folks, is essentially enormously fast computer programs that have seemingly unlimited amounts of cash to trade within fractions of a cent of stocks going back and forth. Now, that's been around for a long time, computer trading. Computer trading is what led to the crash in 1987 when the market came down, because the computer systems essentially traded quickly, dropped stuff out. Computer trading is what led to, if you remember right, probably about a year and a half ago, we had a 1,000-point drop within a matter of minutes, and it came back up again. Nobody knew why. It was computer trading. And so computers have been around and started trading and taking advantage of arbitrage and spreads inside of different stocks for a long time, simply meaning an inefficiency between somebody who is wants to buy it and somebody who wants to sell it. An inefficiency to trade, a computer come in and buy it and sell it a couple of different times along the way. Well, the thing is, it's become so fast now that they can actually enter into, if you think you're going to buy a stock, and I'm just using this as a very simplistic example, folks, don't take this one as gospel. If you think you're going to buy a stock and it's going to be at $18 per share, and the computer systems come by and think, well, we think it's going to actually, we can actually buy it at $18.98 a share and sell it back to you at $18 a share within a fractions of a second that you are going to buy or sell that stock. That's what the high frequency trading does. Now, the unfortunate part about this is where a lot of regulators are starting to pop in, and they talk about it within this article. And as I forget my glasses, I'm missing exactly where it comes in. But where it comes into, the traders are talking about, there's a few things and rules that maybe being rubbed a little bit, that gives the advantage of these high-frequency trading programs to the companies in which own these computers. One is, you're not supposed to do what's called front-running. That means, Tom, if you and I both have a trade for $100 or 100 shares of Ford, and I'm just using this as an example, Merle can't go through and sell the stock and then have Tom buy it afterwards. Clients' trades have to come first. So in here, the question would be is, if you have a computer program that's owned by XYZ Trading Company, and their computers are front-running or trading before their clients are actually supposed to purchase, that might actually be illegal. And so these are some of the questions that come in. Not only that, but it would appear as though that some of the high-frequency trading is getting information about a stock and the price going one direction or another prior to the individuals or prior to being published. And guess what? That also is illegal. So it appears as though that the technology has crossed and blurred the lines a little bit between some illegalities. Is it costing you and I some money? Probably. Enough that would have us ruin our lives? No, it could be just fractions of a penny per day. But the thing is, Tom, is fractions of a penny per day times millions and millions of people
right. Turns
into millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And so that's where the issues come in for high-frequency trading. So technology has popped into our lives to make it quicker than what humans can think.
Something tells me that the masters of the universe on Wall Street will always find a way to game the system, regardless of what rules are put into place, new technologies coming in. They will figure out a way to give themselves an advantage. And is it something that we're just going to have to live with?
Well,
or
absolutely, we're going to have to live with it. It's human nature. I mean, you look at, you could take anything, Tom, and human nature is to try to make it better or improve upon it or do another thing. You think about it, our forefathers 25,000 years ago didn't have a roll of toilet paper. They used something else before they came to an idea saying, geez, something on a roll sitting next to the toilet might be a good idea. So we're always thinking about something more as human beings. And the same thing happens inside of the financial world. you know, one of the major reasons that we had the collapse in 2008 is because banks decided they came up with a system that they could share the risk between multiple banks. It never became a securities product, which, as a licensed representative myself, could trade simply because it wasn't out there. It was simply supposed to be to spread the risk between different banks. And what happened is somebody said, well, hey, we can use these things called credit default swaps, and we can spread the risk, and we can share risk all over the place. And it turned into, you know, a largely a big catalyst of the 2008 drop in the marketplace. So there will always be something that pops up in there. You know, so that'll never end. It'll never change. We just have to try to make sure that the rules stay in place, that things are fair. I don't care, Tom, if you trade 100 times a day. I just want to make sure that you're trading on the same information that I have, and that's the whole backbone to it.
715-845-2155, the number to call. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call here this morning. Tough week for the market. In fact, the NASDAQ, it says, was down its worst weekly loss since October of 2012. Mm-hmm. What was going on that caused the markets to rumble a bit? A
lot of biotechnology being sold. Biotech, of course, NASDAQ, and it has had such a run-up over the course of the last couple of years in biotechnology, so we saw the NASDAQ down some 2%. A lot of outflows going in that. So money leaving that area, going back into people's pockets, are being reallocated in other areas. We take a look at it. The Dow was one of the few shining spots over the course of this week, but they've been down all year. So a little bit of money looks like it actually went inside of there. The market has got this whole thing, and it was on Jim Cramer was talking about it on Saturday or Thursday afternoon. He said the market is just kind of waiting for something to happen. You know, we're looking for some proof that, and it appears as though the proof is out there through some other articles we had. People are waiting for proof that the marketplace is either going to go up or that there's going to be news for it to come down. And there isn't anything out there in this moment. So if you look at it, the market keeps trading between about 1650, 16050, and 16300. We seem to keep bouncing around within that range here over the course of the last number of months. With it, we're waiting for information. We look at the economy information or economic information points that the economy is doing okay and continuing to move forward. We're waiting for proof, for example, that the weather throughout December, January, February was the thing that actually was holding the economy back, and it appears as though that certainly was the case as we start looking at some of the numbers as far as durable goods spending, consumers spending their discretionary income. So all that sort of stuff points that we're going to continue to keep moving forward, but it's almost as though the market just kind of took a pause and went blah, waiting for the last couple of weeks.
715-845-2155. Give us a call here this morning if you have a question for Merle. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this on WSAU.
Okay, do we have everything ready for the trip?
Let's go through the list.
Laptop.
Check.
Tablet.
Check.
Smartphones.
Check and double check.
iDrive.
Check. Wait, what?
iDrive. We're flying cross-country with half a dozen devices. We're going to need our data backed up.
Oh, like our tax records, home movies, wedding pictures?
Exactly. And because it securely backs up all of our devices to one location in the cloud, no matter what happens to our gadgets, we're protected.
Is it safe?
It has military-grade encryption, so only we can access our files.
iDrive sounds great. So that means it must cost a fortune.
That's the best part. For less than $5 a month, I'm protecting our desktop, laptop, tablet, and smartphones. Plus, I signed up at iDrive.com with the promo code PROTECT, so I saved us 20% on the first year.
So, does that mean we can upgrade to first class?
Nice try.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Badgers basketball is hot.
The oven screen, three in the air, right of the circle, book.
Badgers hockey is cool.
And shoots and scores. Can't throw it off door.
Central Wisconsin's Badgers sports station, AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
The Badgers are playing for a bid to the Final Four Saturday against Arizona. Game coverage at 6:30 on the Badgers station. News, talk, sports, WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. Let's go to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Dan.
Hey, Dan, you're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Quick question. I'm already investing in a 401k, and I already have an emergency fund set up. But I realize now that in approximately a year, I could be totally debt-free. Am I better off paying off all my debt before I reinvest any more money?
Yeah, Dan, when do you look at retiring?
About another 10 years.
Okay. You know, I never have a problem with a person having no debt with the exception of one place. Numbers continue to prove that you should have your house paid off when you retire, probably not before. And the reason is you tend to lose all of your write-offs as you go along the way. So let's say, for example, you have a 4% or maybe even a 5% interest rate in your mortgage. You essentially get the write-off from that, and with that write-off, if it's a third, let's say that brings you down to 3.5% or so that you have for an actual cost of the money that's borrowed. Is that making sense?
Yeah, but I thought they were getting rid of that write-off.
Yeah, not so far. So the thing is if you have the ability to pay the mortgage off, you put the money in some sort of an investment that hopefully makes more than 3.5%. Now you're gaining better equity in your life than you are if you have the house paid off. The house is going to grow whether there's a mortgage against it or not. So this being the case, then, if they write off or they get rid of that write-off that you can't write off the mortgage interest rate, which, by the way, I don't think it'll ever happen.
They're not going to do that.
If they did get it, you'd have the cash to be able to pay the house off, done, finished, and settled. That's such a political thing. I don't think they'll ever get rid of the interest rate write-off either side, either the good guys or the bad guys. I'll let you decide which way that is. But in here, I don't think that'll ever disappear. So I don't think when you retire, you should have a mortgage payment. And here's the reason my big philosophy is in doing this for 25 years, I find that when you retire, you still have a mortgage payment, except now they call it health insurance and health expenses. So I don't think you should have a mortgage payment. But I joke with my clients all the time. I said, you know, leave the mortgage on the house at this point in time, especially if the interest rate is reasonable. It's one of the last write-offs you're going to have left, unless you plan on starting to have more children. And, Dan, is that a possibility for you?
No, it's not.
Well, okay, then we have this answer done. So it's not a problem if you have the money put aside someplace earning better than, say, 3.5%, 4%, depending upon where your interest rate is. If you're earning more than that someplace, your equity is growing further by having your house grow and having that equity grow and leverage using the bank's money. If you're going to put that money inside of a CD, well, then it doesn't make any sense. Take the money and just pay off the house because you're going to have better equity not having to pay that interest rate. But it's one of the last write-offs left. Now, I certainly wouldn't take the money and put it in the highest risk items you can find. That would be foolish, but certainly something that has some reasonable growth to it, also some reasonable stability.
Excellent. I thank you very much. All right. I mean, it'll be paid off in 4 or 5 years anyways without any additional payment.
Well, perfect. Excellent.
All right. Thank you much.
Yep, thanks for the call. 715-845-2155 is the number to call. As far as being debt-free, You mentioned the mortgage.
It's a panacea.
Yeah, well sure. But, I mean, one of the first things you've talked about in the past to get your situation under control and begin a strong investment program, first thing you need to do is pay off some of the debt, especially the high interest rate debt.
Absolutely. You know, you think about it from a planning standpoint. Long-term inside of the stock markets, you know, if you use an S&P 500 index, your long-term rate of return is going to be somewhere between 10 and 12%, depending upon what has happened for the prior couple of years. So if you look at 10 and 12% since 1926, that's a pretty good rate of return. But if you're paying 30, well, you're minus 20% every year. It's not going to make any sense to you. So you have to make sure that you're at least getting all that high interest rate stuff cleaned up. Or what a lot of people do is they'll go from credit card A company to credit card B company and bounce it from one to the other, paying 0% or a lower interest rate until they get the thing paid off.
Yeah, but the credit card companies have found a way around that, though. They charge a flat fee to transfer those funds. Which
depending upon the balance, still might be better.
But it basically covers whatever you would pay as far as an interest rate for the first year. So it's really not zero. They may tell you that it's zero, but it's really not
There's
zero.
A fee in there. Well,
they always find a way to get their fees, right?
Well, of course they're going to. Yeah. That's what they do. Isn't that that commercial we have with the fee vampires or something like that they have on TV?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. If you want to try to save some money, you got to try to stay out of debt and not have that, or at least make sure you know what the cost of your debt is, so that you can beat it. That cost of your debt, whatever that interest rate is, with the money you would have, beat it someplace else where you're gaining dollars. For example, borrowing from your 401k to buy a car, to me just kind of seems crazy. Just for an example, if you borrow from your 401k, the first thing the 401k administrator is going to do is they're going to take that amount of money and put it inside of like a guaranteed interest account or a stable account where you're going to earn 1% or 2% interest. That's to guarantee that if you don't pay the note back, the money's there to pay the note back after that 4 or 5 year period of time. Well, now you're having a car, which is a depreciating asset, and you're paying for it and covering it with an appreciating asset that doesn't appreciate. You're shooting yourself in the foot twice.
All right, 715-845-2155. Before we go to break, I know you want to talk about this ETF story, and we'll do that after the news. But quickly here, before the news break, GM is having some problems, obviously, with the recall situation. And now there are some lawsuits that are going to be filed against GM.
Mm-hmm.
The new leader of GM appearing before Congress this week, and I think next week as well, talking about this recall and what they knew when and all of this stuff. GM stock at this point in time, what do you think? And going forward as well.
I don't think GM's going away by any stretch of the imagination. Do I think it's a buy at this point in time? I don't know about that. But here's one thing I know. When you have GM, which is lovingly called Government Motors, if we look at GM from that standpoint, I don't think it's going to go away. Will they end up with a fine? What was it? Toyota just took $1.5 billion fine. GM might have to do the same thing and pay a large fine, but I don't think it's going to go away. I think General Motors could very much be put inside of one of these terms that they say is a value investment, in a sense that the stock prices come dropping down because of some sort of a reason. Something happened for it. Well, obviously here they're being sued because people got hurt and problem because of their ignition problems. In here, of course, last day, it really didn't do much yesterday. I'm trying to take a look at a six-month value in their stock. They were high of $42.50. Now they're sitting at $35. Did they come back? Absolutely they did. Is that enough for us to run out and sell the stock and everything's falling apart? I don't think so. I think what happens is some people get pulverized, problematic. They're going to have to pay some bills, but I don't think the company's going away.
But if you believe GM is coming back, then if the stock is down to 35, is it going to go lower, or is this the time to start buying it then?
Well, I don't know. I tend to try to look at the financials and say, do the financials support where the price is, or is the price lower than what the financials tell us that it should be? And I haven't done that with GM, other than the fact that I'm looking through the information, so I can't make a comment on whether or not. But from the fact of the standpoint is that has the bad news dropped the stock price down? And the answer is absolutely it has. We have a 52-week low of the stock at $27.11, a 52-week high of $47.85, and we're sitting at 34 and three quarters currently. So has the price come down? Absolutely it has from its high. Is it down as far as it should go? I have no idea, but I don't think the company's going away. So the time would be then to look at it and say, well, what are the financials doing? Are their sales improving? Is the bottom line improving? And are we going to be able to buy the stock on sale? But I don't think the company's going away. I think they're going to have a pretty good fine come up, though.
All right, 715-845-2155. We'll take a break for some news. Come back with more. If you have a question from Earl, give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Child home safely.
Tap your heels together 3 times.
It's just a click away.
There is no place like home.
But making sure your child is in the right seat is just one of the steps down the road to safer travels.
I don't know how it works.
Find the right seat for your little one's age and size. There's no better way to get home safely. Know for sure that your child is in the right seat.
How can I ever thank you enough?
Get all the facts at safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Are you thinking about getting your GED diploma? Well, here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a number of pep talks that can motivate you.
Sometimes things don't always turn out the way you want them to.
You know that feeling? People look at you and don't believe in you.
You want some gentle encouragement. Then you're on your way to your GED diploma and a better life.
But I know you're probably just a little bit nervous.
You can find it in yourself to take that first step.
You can improve your future.
You can do this. I know you can.
You need to start pushing yourself.
Now get your game face on and take the first step towards a better life.
Hurry up. Don't make me repeat myself.
Whatever level of motivation you need to get your GED diploma, we've got a pep talk that's right for you. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org for your pep talk and find free GED classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. A magnitude 5.1 earthquake shaking things up in Southern California. The Friday night quake was centered around 20 miles southeast of downtown Los Angeles. An hour before it hit, another smaller quake was recorded in roughly the same area. Officials say another victim was found in the Washington State mudslide. The unidentified victim was yet to be included in the official death toll, which remained at 17. The list of missing people remains at 90 a week after that massive slide. Closer to home, the woman charged with trying to hire a killer has a new judge again. 38-year-old Jessica Strom of Merrill is accused of soliciting the murder of her past boyfriend and fiancé. Marathon County Judge Michael Moran recused himself earlier this month. Clark County Judge John Counsel was appointed, but defense attorney Gary Kreshock immediately filed for a substitution, so Taylor County Judge Ann Knox Bauer was appointed. Kreshock again filed a motion to replace the judge, and yesterday the court appointed Vilas County Judge Neil Nielsen III. He's a substitute judge that presided over Strom's preliminary hearing and arraignment back on March 13th. In sports, the Badger hockey team lost to North Dakota last night 5-2. Their season is over. The Brewers lost in exhibition play against Kansas City at Miller Park 5-4, even though Ryan Braun homered and doubled in his return to Miller Park. And the Badger basketball team is in action today in the NCAA Elite Eight. They take on Arizona. You can hear the game tonight right here, pregame show at 6:30. The weather forecast looks for partly cloudy and pleasant conditions today with a high of 39. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low down to 15. Sunday, partly to mostly cloudy, breezy and warmer with a high getting up to 53. For Monday, rain likely. May change to snow in the evening, but a high temp around 47. And Tuesday, a chance of snow showers early, then partly sunny, high 36. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News Station, WSAU.
Welcome back to The Cat Show. Up next, we have Nico. Nico is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right. A group known especially for their sunspot sleeping, ball chasing, leg rubbing, and of course, companionship. Just look how she struts.
It's like she owns the place.
And see how she curls up and cuddles her person.
The pitch on her purring is simply perfect.
Nice one.
Fantastic cat. But really the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Nico is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
And now, spring break memories. Everybody! Drinking.
Well, maybe I'll have a beer in the White House someday.
Sleeping around.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
And smoking.
Colorado, the first state to allow the sale of marijuana.
What happens during spring break happens at the top and bottom of the hour. The party continues 24-7.
Thank you very much for being here.
On WSAU.
Party on.
I like that. And WSAU.com.
Party on, Wayne.
Party on, girl.
Yeah. 715-845-2155. This is WSAU, and we've got Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. Take your financial questions, and you wanted to touch on a topic that Mark Hulbert covers on MarketWatch today about ETFs. And the headline is, why an ETF might not be your cheapest choice. And I guess before you get into that, just give folks a little quick overview. We've talked about them before, of course, but what an ETF does, what it's supposed to do, and how it all works.
You know, an exchange-traded basket is different than a mutual fund. Is there a reset button?
Sure.
Oh, hold it. We're live, aren't we?
Pushing it right now.
Okay, there we go. An exchange-traded fund, an ETF, represents a basket of some sort of an item versus a mutual fund, which represents a basket of stocks and or bonds. So with it, an exchange-traded fund can be a vehicle where you can own a basket of gold coins, a basket of orange juice futures, and maybe a basket even full of actual oranges. And a concentrate. So an exchange-traded fund can be almost anything. So what has happened as years have come along here with the exchange-traded funds, or ETFs, is that now they represent, an ETF represents a exchange. Let's say the S&P 500. Well, we also have mutual funds that represent the S&P 500. And so the big thing with ETFs is people say, well, they're so much cheaper. So this whole article goes through a huge conversation, but it brings into it a whole bunch of other things that are inside of the investment world that I thought were very important for us to just chat about and discuss here as we wait for your calls. And yes, the calls are, we're still waiting for them. In here, true ETFs, and I'm reading verbatim here for a second, the average, and this is according to investment research from Morningstar, the current ETF has an expense of 0.58 versus the average open-end mutual fund, which has an expense of 1.24. So that being the case, you look at it from the outside and say the exchange traded fund is cheaper, therefore it's better, and therefore we get a better rate of return. And the answer is no, that's not necessarily the case. Mutual funds, like anything else, have additional expenses on the inside that we don't see or that we're not familiar with. For example, ETFs trade like a stock. So, Tom, if you want to buy an ETF and you say, Merle, I want to buy an ETF of orange juice futures, I have to charge you a fee or a commission as I would for an individual stock, so that puts into the price. And more importantly, there's a thing that's in there called a tracking error. And this is one of the things that we talk about our clients all the time when they say, I want to buy the mutual fund that's the cheapest. And I contend to say, I want to buy the mutual fund that's going to have the best rate of return. Well, how do we know which one's going to have the best return? I don't know. If I had one of those, I'd have one of those, what do they call it? What did Johnny Carson call that? The Swami hat.
Yes.
I'd have one of the big Swami hats, and I don't have one of those. But the fact of the matter is we can take a look at some historical expenses, fees, and how funds have performed in the past, though it's by no means any indication of the future. But it might give us an idea or a thought as whether that firm has the ability to get a great rate of return for a reasonable amount of price. The cheapest doesn't necessarily and or always mean the best rate of return. It just simply means that it's the cheapest cost. If we can pay a few tenths of a percent more and get a better rate of return, who would not want to do that? And that tends to be the case. So it goes in here and talks about articles where you have a mutual fund that has an expense ratio of 0.61. But the unfortunate part is it has instances where it's lagged the marketplace that it was trying to emulate by 3.57%. So therefore, that cheaper expense did nothing because we ended up with a lesser rate of return, even though we had a cheaper expense. And by the way, what they're talking about in here was the iShares Brazil capped ETF. Not that that doesn't matter. It's not a recommendation by any means. And then they go through and talk about another one, which are using the MSCI Emerging Markets, where the expense ratio was a lot more, and it had, was higher, but the rate of return was also higher, negating or essentially making it so that the fund wasn't that big of a deal. So the bottom line in here is that the fees, though they certainly do make sense, we have to have an idea of how the fund has performed. If we're going to use past performance of Fund A and Fund B, even though the cheaper one for the higher one, maybe that becomes give us an indicator, but lesser fees isn't the automatic trigger to say we want to buy that fund versus another. And one of the big things they're talking about it. Another thing they talk about inside of this portfolio, and I really appreciate, and we're talking about Mark Hulbert's article called Why You Want to Avoid ETFs. Again, why do you want to avoid ETFs? I'm not saying to avoid ETFs, but again, we have to know what we're buying like anything else. Tax efficiency. Inside of mutual funds, as well as inside of ETFs, there's a certain amount of buying and selling that occurs on the inside. An exchange-traded fund, I do not believe, has any sort of loss carrying forward because, again, an ETF represents a basket of funds and or options or goods or whatever it is. It represents a basket of things. And with that, they don't have the ability to tax-wise keep loss carry forwards, et cetera, on the inside, is where an active fund does have that ability. So mutual funds for a long term, or if you have a large, good quality mutual funds, they might have some losses. So if they buy and sell XYZ stock inside of the mutual fund, and XYZ stock goes from $10 to $20 per share, that capital gains tax gets passed off to you and I as investors. That's the way mutual funds have always worked since the beginning of mutual fund time. In there, though, if the mutual fund manager has a loss carry forward for some losses from years before, they can offset some of that gain for the loss carry forward that they had before and try to make that portfolio a little bit more efficient. As where our friends inside of the ETF world, that may not be the case. They may have it so that if the mutual fund goes from $10 a share to $20 per share and there's that gain in there, that full gain gets passed off to you and I as investors. So therefore, that additional tax of the ETF, depending upon how actively they're managed or what type of an ETF it is, that may give us larger tax on the inside that we may be able to help offset the taxes if we're just simply using a mutual fund that's actively managed with the manager. And one of the things on the inside in here they talk is what's called a bid-ask differential. Inside of this article, they actually use the term a little bit differently. But I want to touch upon this because it always seems a little bit weird. we hear about mutual funds. Well, this mutual fund is no load. There's no expenses. There's no cost to this. All mutual funds have a cost and a fee, folks. Guess what? There's no such thing as a free lunch. Even people who say, well, I have a 401k. I don't pay for anything with that. Well, guess what? You still are. Internally, there's management fees inside of a mutual fund. No matter what you do, they're out there, folks. You're going to pay that. The question comes is sometimes you have mutual fund families that say, well, we're no-load mutual funds, but they have this thing that's kind of been the bane of existence for the Securities Exchange Commission called a bid-ask differential, and they talk about it inside of this article. In here, a number of ETFs, well, and they're calling a bid-offer price. The spread between an ETF bid-offer price is the term they're using. We call it a bid-ask differential when I grew up in school. Let's say, Tom, if you want to buy IBM shares, you say, Merle, buy me some IBM. I'll say, okay, fantastic. I can go to the open marketplace, but there's one entity that buys and sells IBM. It's called a market maker. I'm sorry, a specialist in the New York Stock Exchange. So that specialist only buys and sells IBM. I know when I go there, I say, I want to buy IBM shares. If they have an inventory, they have to sell it to me. Those are the rules. But the NASDAQ doesn't have that. The NASDAQ has a whole series of people called market makers. And you might have 30 people that trade XYZ technology company. And with it, you might have 30 people. And I have the ability to choose out of those 31 the one that has the lowest price. Makes sense. Well, there's a number of mutual fund families that do there. And as they're talking about inside of this article, they're talking about that ETFs also can make the market of their own stock. So if they make the market of not their other stock, but the stock that they may be buying or selling or moving, so if they make the market, that difference between the bid and ask, what somebody wants to buy it for and what they'll sell it for, that we would have the ability to look at 30 people, for example. They don't look at the 30 people. They do it within themselves. And in doing so, that allows them to widen the spread between the buy and the sell. So by widening that spread, and as Mark Hulbert calls it, the bid and offer price, by widening that spread, they add some profit that's not shown up as far as their expenses go. And that, too, then also adds to the transactional costs and the costs that go along the way. So a lot of no-load mutual funds do this. Not all of them, but a lot do. Some of them do it a lot, and they put that spread in there. The bottom line is, folks, there's no free lunch in here. The only thing is you have to say, I know I'm going to pay an expense or a fee. What am I getting for the expense or the fee that I'm actually paying? That becomes more of the question.
715-845-2155, the number to call.
Folks, the opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements that may not come true. Securities and investment advisory services offered through HBEC Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. HBEC Incorporated and Kelchin Associates are unaffiliated companies, and folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
I was just reading Chuck Jaffe's column. I don't know if you had a chance to look at that at all. The headline is, a fund with 30% returns may be wrong for you. And the example he uses is a story about a 60-year-old widow from New Jersey. Her name was Sheila. And she says she was a bit taken aback recently when her financial advisor suggested selling her best-performing fund because, quote, it's not the right kind of fund for you, unquote. She had a fund that was paying a 30% return. And she asked the advisor if the fund was too aggressive for someone her age. She also asked if anything had changed about the way management was running the fund, somehow making it less appropriate for her than if it had been first purchased by her late husband 15 years ago. No, she was told those were not the issues. It said it was that the fund didn't generate returns the way we want to get them. And she says she found that statement a bit shocking, largely because the fund had averaged, as we said, a gain of 30% annually for the last 5 years. And the advisor was suggesting moving the money to another fund that had also been near the top of the small cap pool and had earned right around 30% return as well since the start of the current bull market back in 2009. Now, she worried that the advisor was churning her account, but she was assured that making the change would not generate any sales charges or fees or commissions for the agent, as the woman pays a flat fee for management services. She said that they were suggesting the fund change is that the one fund made its 30% in a less volatile way than the other fund made its 30%. And for a woman in her position, obviously, you'd love to get the 30%, but to do it in a way that it doesn't have the ups and downs mm-hmm. of another particular fund. two funds that both make around 30%, two small-cap funds both making around 30%, have that big a difference in their volatility that there would be, it would be worth making a change there?
Certainly could be. You know, first of all, folks, if you have a fund that's making 30%, that's never bad. The problem is what the risk is it takes to get there. You know, standard question I have is, what do you want your money to do? And everybody wants 30% guaranteed, no volatility or risk.
Yeah.
So 30% is not the problem. The
right.
problem is,
sure.
what's the risk going to happen for the years coming forward? And so from this, not knowing what funds that they were using, this type of stuff. But, you know, think about it in this way. Tom, we could do 30% in a portfolio, and I'm using this as an example, folks. This isn't what we do. But we can make 30% in a portfolio using derivatives contracts. And so we're using derivative contracts only, and we're betting, let's say it's a small cap fund, and we're only betting on the currency of small cap companies, and we could do 30% for a year. But then we could also do 30% by just having a large diversified mutual fund that's in small cap stocks. So both small caps, in my made up example here, both small caps, but one of them's based upon the profit and the expansion of a bunch of companies. The other one's betting on a derivatives of currencies of small countries. One's going to have a considerable amount of volatility than the other, in my opinion. They just both so happen to have 30% for the year. So with it, the question I would have is one, how much is in this fund? What is it in it? I would have asked the same types of questions, actually, as this advisor. The advisor, of course, if he's getting a 1% fee on a management account, as they mentioned inside of this article, and I have not read the article, by the way, if he's getting a 1% fee, it's accurate that there's really no benefit to him to choose investment A or investment B. That wouldn't be churning by any means. But if he's taking a look at the risk and he can show me as a consumer, as an investor, how it's less volatility or how it has less risk, and there's a number of measures of that, then it would seem like it'd be an appropriate change if we're going to still get that same rate of return, and hopefully it's for a part of the portfolio, not all. If we can still get that rate of return for that one part but do it with less risk, that makes perfectly reasonable sense to me.
715-845-2155. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. The phone lines are still open. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the woods, just outside of town.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, we were about to head home, you know, after having a bonfire.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right. See, Smokey told me the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
that was a joke.
Oh.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. Only you can prevent wildfires.
In a world where your tires are your only connection to the road, one man, four tires, free air. An epic battle against underinflation, tire damage, and even tire failure. In the ultimate fight for properly inflated tires, the warrior gives his heart, his soul, to keep those he loves safe on the road. Tires will inflate. Money will be saved. A message from the Rubber Manufacturers Association.
You're struggling with your mortgage. You think about it. You don't do anything but think about it.
What are we going to do if we lose the house? Where are we going to go?
At work.
I can't let anybody find out. I'm so embarrassed.
At dinner.
How can I tell the kids? It's going to wreck their lives.
And at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get through this. What's going to happen to us?
It's time to stop thinking. It's time to start dialing. Call 1-888-995-HOPE for a free government program that offers expert one-on-one advice about your mortgage options.
I'm all alone.
No, you're not. We've helped over a million homeowners, and we want to help you. And now there are more ways to help. Call 1-888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
One by one, they step into the arena,
to share an idea, express an opinion, that provoke a reaction.
Now I'm doing something. I was ignoring it for too long.
From local legends to national superstars, and you're invited to join them.
I want to know how many taxpayers in this country feel that this government is representing them.
Seth, Tom, Chris.
Stay informed. It's very important that everybody knows what's going on in the world.
Jerry Bader, Rush Limbaugh, and Sean Hannity. WSAU.
And we are back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau. Phone lines are open if you want to get through to Merle here this morning. Give us a call. What else is on your radar screen over there? What have you been hearing from your clients as far as this marketplace goes?
I just wanted to say my name is Ronald McDonald.
We were just discussing
the new Taco Bell
breakfast campaign. McDonald's striking back by offering free coffee to everyone starting on Monday for a limited time at their restaurant.
Well, you know, the cost of free coffee is probably going to be pretty cheap as compared to the amount of advertising that Taco Bell paid to have them come in. Yeah, I was looking at this, Tom, and we were talking about this at the break, folks. We were looking at the McDonald's, Taco Bell's waffle taco.
Yeah, the breakfast waffle, yeah.
My God, is this just a big chunk of gooey goodness, folks. It's got a waffle on here. It's got some eggs. It's got some bacon, it's got some sausage all wrapped up in a waffle, and it's got syrup on it.
You're gonna head over there as soon as the show is done.
Do they get them in drive through? That'd be even better.
Yeah, try to eat that while you're driving.
Oh, it's not gonna make a mess on your shirt.
No, not at all.
Carpet or stains.
Well, I mean, as far as that goes, pretty a good idea to get into the lucrative breakfast market because, as we've seen, many more people are not eating breakfast at home. They're eating on the go. They're driving stuff on the way to work.
And breakfast is high margin and inexpensive to do, so you can buy a whole bunch of that, you know, fake egg product and whip it up with a little bit of water and put that stuff on. You're perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful thing. You know, here's McDonald's without getting real excited about it. Just simply say, we're going to offer free coffee. And by the way, McDonald's does have the coffee right. I've never thought about Taco Bell going in for a coffee, but I'm guessing they probably have some since they're having the rest of the coffee stuff with it. So that's always kind of fun to have a little bit of that. Tom, having a little bit of fun in here, an article you had popped up, which was bottomless minibar.
Yeah, before we get to that, we do have a phone call. Let's go to the phone.
The
good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Joe.
Hey, Joe, you're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Good morning, Joe.
Yeah, good morning. The question I have is I'm contemplating holding off to collect Social Security until I'm required to at 70.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, my wife is 4 years younger than I am. I'm 63.
Okay.
And if she should outlive me, when can she actually collect the full spousal benefit? Can she collect that at any time as long as she's eligible? And how does that work?
I don't know if I have it exact. And here's, if you want an exact answer, I recommend, if you're in the Wausau area, the people here at the Social Security office here in Wausau are fantastic. I've had to deal with them many times, and they're fantastic. And even as a governmental agency, I give them a hats off and a cheers. So they're doing a great job with that. But I believe what ends up happening is that if you start collecting at 62, she would start collecting your dollar amount that you use. So the discount that you'd have from, say, 66 to 62, you'd have that discount. She'd start collecting at that discounted rate. So if you wait until 70.
I'm going to wait till I'm 70.
Yeah, and so if you collect at 70, she would start collecting whenever you collect it. So if you passed away at 69, I believe she would start collecting as of the value you were at 69, even though she's younger than you are.
Okay, what if she is drawing on hers, you know, before I pass away? Does that reduce her benefits?
If yours is higher than hers,
yes.
Traditionally that's the case,
yes.
She would step up to yours.
She would just step up to the full amount.
What that means now, Joe, is you have to make sure she's happy, because if she's going to get more money with you gone, this could have some sort of a paradigm shift in your household.
I'm a nice guy.
Just to let you know that arsenic smells like almonds, I'm told. I'm just saying.
Is it that much of a step up to make that big of a difference is the question, yeah.
Well,
all right.
$5 could be enough of a step up in thing if you don't treat her right. So
thanks
be good, Joe.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Appreciate it. 715-845-2155. Are you finding out more and more people are waiting to collect Social Security until later?
Yeah, a lot of people are. You know, I probably had it a half a dozen times here over the course of the last several weeks. And largely, the people are saying, you know what, I don't want to just simply stop what I'm doing at age 62. I don't mind what I'm doing. I like my job, and what else would I do? A lot of it with the health insurance, people not knowing what's going on with the Obamacare, health insurance, Medicare, all this sort of stuff. So I'm just going to keep working for a while. It doesn't matter to me. I can still keep working. I'm making more money, you know, working than if I stopped and I did something part-time. So it just makes sense for me to just keep doing what I'm doing. So I'm seeing a lot more of this more than you think. A lot of people think, well, geez, I'll wait till I'm 70. My Social Security is higher. It'll be a lot better. We didn't save as much as we wanted to. So all those different rules in there.
What's the basis now for having a part-time job and still collecting Social Security? How much?
Well, between 62 and what's called your normal retirement age, let's call it 65 for sake of ease, you can earn just under $15,000. So if you earn more
than
$15,000,
still
get full Social Security,
okay.
Correct. If you go over that, there's a $1 loss for every two that you earn. There's a little bit of a difference in there. In a year, you turn your normal retirement age, and you're going in, it's about $35,000, but it's a one-time thing. But once you hit age 70, you can earn as much as you want to and still collect Social Security, which my mom, who works for me in the office at 73 years old, tells me all the time she can earn a lot more plus collect Social Security. Yeah. She doesn't have any loss. And so, well, good luck to her.
Let's try to sneak one more call in here. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Jim.
Jim, you're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Morning, Jim.
Morning. Hey, two questions. I manage my own money, and I use probably 15% of my portfolio in floating rate funds because they've been doing so well. What's your thought?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have a problem with floating rate funds by any means. You just have to make sure that whatever company that you have your floating rates in, that you know what their underlying investments are. You know, some companies that have their underlying investments where they're borrowing to individual companies are secured. Some invest to other investment firms putting their money. Just make sure you understand what the underlying investment is, okay?
Okay.
On the floating rate.
I got another question. I've been online looking at, I'm 58, thinking about retiring in, maybe 5, 6, 7 years.
Uh-huh.
Immediate annuities, the return on them right now is just abysmal.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
I absolutely agree with you on immediate annuities. Let me chat about immediate annuities for a second. I love using immediate annuities and retirement plans when they work out, when it works out right. Right now, interest rates, I think, are too low to use that. But let me give this to you, at least try to keep this in the back of your head and in your quiver for years from now. When immediate annuities work out well for non-IRA dollars, don't use them for IRA dollars, in my opinion. For non-IRA dollars, if we put in, and here's the multiple used to be, if we wanted $1,000 per month, we'd have to put like $64,000 some change in. But this is when the interest rates were at about 7%, so that's the calculation. And they're not there now. I'm just using this for an example. Jim, okay, you with me on this?
Yep.
But what happened is if we put $60,000 from our pocket into this thing, we took $1,000 out, based upon how taxes are calculated on annuities that are annuitized, we would have some 98% of the $1,000 per month would be tax-free because it would be considered a return of our own principal based upon how this calculation is done. So what it allowed us to do in the old days when interest rates were higher was to have a five-year immediate annuity, for example, take the rest of the money, bank it, invest it, make sure it's continuing to grow, and in 5 years we take some more money out, we can start it all over again. And so thereby in doing so, we could make sure that we had the monthly income coming into the household was just enormously tax efficient. So annuities outside of IRAs and primarily using immediate annuities from an income standpoint like this work fantastic, but they're not working today because the interest rates are so low. But keep that in your quiver for later.
All right, thanks a lot for the call. We are out of time here today, but if folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
Folks, we will be at 3rd Avenue and Bridge Street here in sunny and warm Wausau, Wisconsin.
Hopefully.
Stop on in, catch us for a cup of coffee. I hope you're right on that one. If not, give us a call, 715-849-3600, should you have any questions, or toll-free outside of the Wausau area, 866-355-5100, or always find us online at KelchandAssociates.com.
All right, we'll talk to you again down the road. It's coming up on 9 o'clock. We've got the news. The Polka Show's on the way. And don't forget, Badger basketball tonight. Wisconsin takes on Arizona in the Elite Eight with a trip to the Final Four on the line. And we'll be on the air with pregame programming at 6:30 right here on WSAU.
News.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio, I'm Paul Stevens. More objects spotted by search planes from China looking for a Malaysian Airlines Flight 370.
When you add it to the objects that were spotted by five planes yesterday, it might suggest that they are now searching in an area that will prove profitable for the investigation. But one of the objects spotted yesterday, it turned out to be some fisherman's debris.
Sky News reporter Alistair Bunkhall in Kuala Lumpur. Wet weather in Washington State slowing recovery efforts after a massive mudslide.
1 week since a deadly mudslide in Oso, Washington.